Voice of
another podcast from fanboysoftheuniverse.com. I'm Chance, your host, and I'm very excited that this is the first episode of our new series of podcasts. We've been on hiatus for just a little bit, but now we are back, and we have a really exciting schedule of topics and guests to carry us through the end of the year, and I'm really happy that you are all listening in. Joining me as my co-host today is our frequent contributor on Fanboys of the Universe, our movie and music and pop culture guru, Johnny M. Johnny, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Chance.
Now, Johnny, on a scale of like 1 to spaz, how excited are you about our guest today?
Spaz is as high as it goes.
That's all I can think of right now.
It goes to 11. That's all I can think of. This is one of the biggest spaz moments of my entire life, I guess you could say.
Well, I'm so glad I could be here and be part of it as well. And I'm very, very, very happy to introduce our special guest for this podcast. She's an actress, a singer, an icon, and you will know her probably best as the voice of Jerrica Benton and Jem from Jem and the Holograms, Samantha Newark. Samantha!
I'm so happy to be here, you guys. Thanks for inviting me. Hello, everybody out there. It's nice to be here.
This is so exciting for us, and because mainly because Jem has been like a huge topic of conversation recently. The shows have been airing to huge success on the Hub Network. The DVD set, the gorgeous box set that just came out of the full series.
Yeah.
And then at New York Comic Con a couple weeks ago, Hasbro had this really interesting display setup of the Jem memorabilia from the 80s. It just feels like a Jem renaissance is happening.
It's a big time. It's blowing up again. It really is.
How does it feel?
I mean, it never totally went away. You know, there have been diehard fans, and there were petitions online for years for the fans would write to whoever happened to own the Jem at the time, because it's changed hands a bunch of times, but it was like, you've got to bring it back, we're freaking out, we have that Jem back. So it's just been so amazing. The fans are so, so happy, and it's I'm happy too. I mean, it's wonderful. Wonderful to see it back on TV. It's totally surreal.
Now, you're absolutely right. It sort of never went away, especially, you know, with the, you know, once the internet came along and fans could connect with each other and talk about the show. You know, what do you think it is that has contributed to Jem's, you know, long-lasting popularity?
Gosh, you know, it's such a, I've been asked that a lot, and I think it's so many different things that went into it. You know, the fans just, it really struck a chord with them as kids. It was a fun show. I mean, you gotta admit. Like, there was music videos and colorful costumes and songs and you know, great characters. And it was developing storylines, and the kids got really invested in knowing these characters and rooting for whoever was their favorite. And, just great stories, great writing. I think we just had a really wonderful team of people from the writers, the storyboard artists, the musicians, everybody. And it was a moment in time that came together. And apparently they had a really big budget too, which helps, which is really nice, which gives people a lot more freedom to just be as creative as they possibly can. So, yeah. But who knows what makes the difference between something that sticks around for this long and kind of crosses over into pop culture like it has. I don't know what that ingredient is. I really don't.
And it's not just, I've noticed, not just this, our particular generation. You know, the kids, like a whole new generation, they're getting into it. That's got to feel pretty good to be a part of something that you know, can be passed down to a new generation of fans.
Oh, it's so fun. I was at a great convention this weekend in Nashville, actually. I didn't have to get on a plane, which was nice, but it was GMX, the Geek Media Expo. And I was meeting, like, the little Jem fans. Like, this one little girl was 3, and she came up to the table, and her mom grew up watching Jem. and loved it. And she just got the box set for her little girl, but those are her little ones watching it on the hub. And but I don't think she quite understood the where the actors, you know, she's just seeing this magical world of Jem and doesn't quite understand. But I said to her, Showtime Synergy, and her little face just lit up. Like she just was trying to process it, you know. She recognized the voice, and it was so cute. It was so cute. And now we have, like, you know, 22-year-olds that there was a girl at the convention, and, like, she's a chemist, and she's got this great life, and she's 22 years old, and she said, I just started watching Jem on the Hub, and I love it. I watch it all the time. I'm going to get the box set. It's a great show. And so the demographic now has gone from, you know, the diehard fans that grew up with it to these new little peaches of children that are watching it, and everything kind of in between. So pretty awesome.
Now, how did you first get involved with the show?
I had an agent representing me for film and television and commercials, and I was kind of a small fish in a really big agency, and one of the agents at that agency left and started her own kind of smaller boutique agency, and she wanted to take me with her. I stopped auditioning for film, and I just started auditioning for commercials, on-camera commercials, and voiceovers, and I actually really loved the voiceover world. I didn't realize that I would love it so much, but it makes sense because I grown up singing, and I understood what it felt like to communicate with the microphone, and so I just loved it from the very start. Just even the auditioning process, I loved it. And I did one little thing before Jem, and then I auditioned for Jem, and I booked Jem and worked on the show like a fiend for all the episodes that we did. So.
Wow. Now, yeah. Was there any sort of perception when you got this job that was so closely tied to a toy line, was there a perception early on that, like, oh, you know, this is going to be a toy commercial? Or did you know right away that this was going to be a much more sophisticated experience?
You know, I gotta say, it's so strange. I don't know if it's because it's been a lot of years, but I really don't remember having a concept like how huge the show was. You know, that they were going to have the lunch boxes and the sleeping bags and the sheets and the dolls and the... I don't really remember all of that. And the only thing I do remember is that my mom and my dad said, oh my gosh, we've got to get you a doll. You have to have a doll. My dad's like, probably be worth something one day. You should go get one. So I remember going with my mom to Toys R Us or something, and I got a glitter and gold doll, which I still have. She's still in the box. I never even opened her. It's wonderful. And but I don't remember at the time. I just remember being very caught up in the fact that I got this great job and I was going to get to use my vocal acting chops and my vocal chops to be creative and get paid for it. Like that's kind of what I remember at the time.
When you would receive a script, say, you know, was there ever anything that just really surprised you? Like, you know, Jem's going to be a movie star now, or Jem has a radio station now. Did anything just sort of like really surprise you?
I wouldn't say surprised, but I loved it so much because I grew up as a singer, and all I ever wanted to be since I was like 7 years old was singing for thousands of people and performing. So, like, getting to, you know, say things like, hey, thank you for coming to our show, and our next song is blah, blah, blah. And, you know, I was like vicariously living out my rock star fantasies. Her Jem, she was everything that I had always dreamed of, you know, the success that you always dream of when you're dreaming like that as a kid. And that was always so much fun. Just, I remember really, really loving that part.
She could have had a lot more fun if she didn't have those orphans to take care of.
Yeah, I know, right?
They really held her back.
They did.
Now, I had dinner recently with a group of guys, and they just all happened to be gay men in their 30s. And yeah. When I told them that I was going to be talking to you, it was like I said I was going to be talking to the president or something, except they were more excited.
Oh my
about
god.
That.
So cool.
And one guy in particular had a really emotional reaction because I'd asked him, I said, "Well, what, give me some questions. What would you want to ask her?" And he was just like, "I don't know. I don't even I wouldn't even be able to talk." And so what is it with the gays in gym?
Gosh, you know, I think maybe on some level it just gave young boys that maybe didn't even know they were gay, but they certainly weren't into Transformers and the G.I. Joe and the archetypes that they were supposed to gravitate toward. They liked gem, and they liked the fashion and the glitter and the music and the dresses and just the whole fabulousness of gem. And I think it gave them permission to maybe dream out of the box a little bit more than they would dare to in their home life or in school or whatever. It was like they could just kind of be transported into this world that they were really attracted to.
Joni, what do you think?
Well, I will say that gem is what inspired me to take up music and become a songwriter and musician myself. The music videos are what did it for me, because it was so cool and was so unique for the time. And I never got into like Transformers or G.I. Joe or anything like that, but gem, it was so different, and all the characters were just kind of wild, and in terms of, you know, their dress and their hair, and nobody had an actual hair color, and just everybody was being who they wanted to be. And I think that was a big part of it.
That's so cool. Yeah,
I think for me, like, a lot of it was the secret identity stuff, which, you know, you can always relate to as like, oh, I have to hide this part of myself and put on a different face for the public somehow. And then I also think that the show, more than like a lot of other shows that were on at the time, really had a message of tolerance and of acceptance. And, you know, the characters really, like, they sort of formed this family. I mean, you know, Jerrica and Kimber were sisters, but they formed this sort of non-traditional family that I think, you know, was comforting to gay kids who were probably already thinking, I'm going to have a different sort of life than, you know, than my family. So I think it, like, even on sort of a subversive or, you know, subtextual level, like, it was a really accepting show to watch.
That's so true. That's so, so true. And, you know, I know from, like, my childhood, I grew up in England, and then we lived in Africa, and then we went back to England, and then we moved to America and lived in Virginia, and then we moved to California. So I was the kid that was always in a brand new school with people I didn't know and trying to make friends. And, you know, I really love how warm and enrolling the archetype of Jem is, because she's just like, I don't care where you come from, I don't care what you look like, you have value and you're wonderful, and come into our circle. I won't put up with any shenanigans, but, you know, you're welcome. And I always wanted that in my world. I was always trying to find that, because I was always the new girl, and it was tough. So I can relate to what you just said. You know, it's like, sometimes I wish that I had had the opportunity to grow up with Jem as a little kid, you know, and experience it as a child, because I didn't get to, obviously. But yeah, I really like what you just said about that.
And then one little funny thing when I was watching Jem was my dad would get home from work about the same time that Jem would be on. And so like, if my dad would walk through the room, I would change the channel really fast to something else.
No.
Because I didn't want him to, because it was very pink. It was very pink.
It was extraordinarily pink.
And like this pink glow sort of like bathing me in this pink light.
Like the whole living room bathed in pink.
So my dad would walk through the living room, and I would like, you know, change it to G.I. Joe or Transformers or something. And then, you know, he would walk out of the room, and boom, you know, Jem would be back on.
Well, you know, what's funny, my mother didn't really care about it. In fact, she encouraged me to, you know, do whatever I wanted and be whoever I wanted. A few years ago, they moved from New Mexico to Wisconsin. I had to go down there and go through all my boxes and take out all my toys and say what I want to keep, what I want to get rid of. And I found all my Jem dolls. And we found Pizzazz as a guitar, but there was no Pizzazz doll. I knew I had her, and I was kind of upset. So for my birthday 2 months later, my mother got me a Pizzazz doll on eBay.
Oh,
your mom rocks. Your mom rocks. That's so cool. That's great.
That is very cool. Yeah, I ended up getting one of the dolls once I had like reached adulthood, and it was via
eBay. Which doll did you get?
I got, actually, coincidentally, I got the glitter and gold Jem.
That's so crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's the one that I got, and it's still mostly in the box. Like, I sort of couldn't resist getting the tape out and, like, you know, listening to the songs, but yeah. that was the doll that I got.
But I still have all the tapes that came with the dolls too. They were in the box with the dolls, and they actually still work 25 years later.
Oh, and you actually still have something to play them on. That's what I'm impressed with. Wow.
Now, Samantha, you have a reputation for being a champion, not only of the show but especially the fandom around it. So, you know, what made you decide to, you know, embrace this instead of sort of, you know, walking away from it?
You know, I somebody said to me once, and it was so true. I was at a fan convention in Atlanta, I think it was, and I was sitting next to this amazing artist. I just get to meet the most talented people at these conventions, and he was like a comic book illustrator and just beautiful, beautiful work. And he was watching as these Gen fans were coming up to my table to get their merchandise signed and to get pictures and things, and how they suddenly just were transported back to when they were, you know, 8 years old or 5 years old, and were just beaming all this love to me, because it just brought them such happy memories, and I got to kind of give it back. And after, said, "Oh, Samantha, you absolutely have the love job." And I was like, you know, that's what it is. I mean, there's so much kindness, and I love kids, and sometimes it's kids in 30-year-old bodies, because it's just they connect to something of when they were little, and I just want to hug them, and I'm a hugger, so they have to know that about me. But yeah, it's just an amazing experience, and I never expected that. I never expected that. I thought that people, of course, would remember the show fondly, but it's deeper than that. That's what's really been amazing to me. It's people come up and they burst into tears. And they tell me stories about, yeah, you know, my childhood sucked. My parents used to beat the crap out of me. And, you know, Jem was like the only thing that gave me comfort and made me feel like things were possible. And your voice was a comfort in my world when I didn't have any. And you hear things like that, and it's like, how can you not respond to that? It's just, I feel so, it's humbling, I guess is the best word. It's totally humbling.
That's a lot of emotion to put on you. Like, how is it an overwhelming experience by the end of the day?
I wouldn't say in a bad way in any way. It's humbling, and it's beautiful, and it's like real life, you know? I think a lot of the time we live life very on the surface, and to have those moments where you feel like you're really connecting to somebody and somebody is being moved, those are the moments that I feel are the most precious, because they're the most real and the most spontaneous, and I get to see that all the time when I do these fan conventions, and it's amazing. It's totally amazing, and I meet the loveliest people. I met this woman this weekend, and she's so funny. She was running around in a princess costume, and she's like this lovely girl, and she said, "If I had told myself when I was 8 years old that I would be standing here talking to the voice of Jem, I wouldn't have believed myself." And it was so cute. And then it turns out she's like highly, highly decorated pilot, and, you know, has like flown missions to Iraq, and like she's just a brilliant woman.
Oh,
and
wow.
Yet she has Star Wars sheets that she sleeps in because she loves them, and she dresses up as a princess, and like she's a brilliant, brilliant girl. And that's the fan base. It's like she once was 8 years old, and Jem meant everything to her and inspired her in whatever way it inspired her. And so, you know, I can't not react to that and just adore the Jem fans. They're amazing. They're totally amazing.
I'm getting all choked up. That's kind of just listening to it. And could you
echo that? If I had told my 8-year-old self that I would be talking to you right now, I would have thought I was crazy. It's kind of, I'm completely gobsmacked that I have you on the phone.
I love that word, gobsmacked.
Well,
that's one of my favorite words.
I was significantly older
than
really 8,
funny.
But we won't talk about that. I was watching the show. Hey, yeah. Do you think maybe you could call Mark Hamill and tell him to, like, maybe try giving his fans a hug once in a while?
Yeah, you know, what's funny is, like, the first convention I was ever invited to was in Secaucus, New Jersey, And it was a Star Wars convention, and Mark Hamill was the guest of honor, and they invited me to you know, represent my work on Jem. I've never seen so many stormtroopers in my life, like sitting eating cereal in the morning in the restaurant with their stormtrooper outfit. I was like, wow, I never even knew this world existed. This is so amazing.
Now, you've mentioned, you've talked a little bit about your history as a singer and as a child, you know, sort of aspiring to be a singer. And fans of our site probably already know that, you know, you have released a self-titled album in 2008, which spawned the fan favorite single Jem Boy.
Right.
And now you're back with a brand new album called Something Good.
Yeah.
Which was
released. Yes, it was just released on Friday, October 21st.
And it's on iTunes and at SamanthaNewark.com.
Yes, if you want the hard copy, you can get it on my website at SamanthaNewark.com, and my street team will ship it out to you.
Oh.
And or you can download it off of iTunes. But it was just such a labor of love, and I did it long distance, which was completely bonkers. I wouldn't recommend it. But
what does that mean?
I'm in Nashville. I'm based in Nashville right now, but have voiceful travel, obviously. But my producer, Dave Polich, is based in Los Angeles, and we had been wanting to do a record together forever. And he's so bloody talented and busy. He was the keyboard programmer for Michael Jackson's This Is It tour.
Oh, wow.
So he was involved in that, and when we were going to work together before, I was a backup singer with Leonard Cohen, so then our plans fell through one more time because I was going to go on this tour with Leonard Cohen, but he ended up canceling. But so we've been trying to make this happen for a few years now, and you know, when the whole thing happened with Michael, obviously we know what happened, but we were like, oh my gosh, there's a lull, let's do a record, let's do it. And I've been writing songs like crazy, and so I just started sending him my demos, and we chose 10 songs, and there are actually 11 songs on the record, because two of them, we've got two versions of Something Good, his favorite and my favorite. We just decided we weren't going to fight about it. We just put them both on. So, but yeah, I'm very proud of it. I wrote everything on the record, and it's just a fun, like, up-tempo, you can dance to it. It's just a feel-good record. I'm getting some good feedback, and I'm just hoping people will love it. That's all you can ask for, you know?
Well, I mean, I listened to it, and it is excellent, I will say. I really, really enjoyed it. Not that I didn't think I wouldn't. But one thing I noticed is it's very different from your self-titled album in style.
Yes.
I'm kind of wondering what made you decide to go in the more kind of dance electronica path than you have in the previous one, was more kind of singer-songwriter, guitar-based stuff.
Yeah, I think as a singer, I've done a lot of session work too, so it's a very weird animal when you're doing session work, because you kind of go, oh my gosh, okay, today I'm singing a country song, or today I'm singing a pop song, or a big band kind of thing, or whatever you're doing, and it can get confusing, because I love so many different kinds of music, so many different genres, but then you start to wonder, well, where do I fit? Who am I as an artist? Like, what do I want to create and write and put out there in the world? And I always loved Massive Attack and Portishead and Everything But the Girl, and, you know, just the electronica, Lush, Annie Lennox, you know, that yummy Imogen Heap stuff just lit me up like a Christmas tree. I've always really loved it. And the record that I did back in 2008, I had met with this producer, and he's a great songwriter, super, super talented guy, but I didn't do a lot of writing on that record, and it was mostly lyrics that I contributed. And I think I just needed to do it myself. I think that's really what it came down to, was, okay, I got GarageBand, I've got access to all these loops, I'm just going to start creating the music that I like, and whatever happens, happens. And that's really where this record came from, was like, I like this sound, and I like this groove, and I like this, and this is sexy, and I want to, you know, and I just ran with it. And then I'd send my ideas to Dave, and he'd be like, I love it, it's really good. And then, of course, his production magic just took it where I heard it in my head, where I thought it could go, and he took it there and made it happen. So I flew to L.A. to record the vocals and wrote the songs here, flew to L.A., recorded 10 songs in like 6 days, 7 days, and then came back, and we just flew files across country for months, you know, just wow. agreeing on mixes and, you know, like, I'm not crazy about that synth sound. He'd send it back, and I was like, I love that. That's perfect. Yeah.
Now, would you ever do this sort of long-distance arrangement again?
I'd rather not. I'd rather not. I mean, it kind of was the way we needed to do it at the time because we were just our schedules. But, yeah, I mean, I really, because I did one song I recorded in Nashville. I actually recorded some vocals for Lover in Nashville. But I felt like I was doing session work, and I was like, it doesn't feel like I'm making my record. I thought, I got to get on a plane. I'm going to take a week. I'm going to get on a plane. I'm going to go to L.A., and I'm going to knock all these songs out in a week and be in the studio and be there, be in my album mode. And so that's what I did, and I'm really glad I did that.
Well, we're going to play a clip. This is the first single that was released from the album called I Got Everything. So we're going to play a clip from that, and we will be right back and talk about it.
Awesome. I got my game on, I got my freak on, so right I'm wrong. I got everything, can't take your eyes off, don't take your hands off, I'll blow your lid off. I got everything, don't you fight it, don't try to hide it, I know you like it. I got everything, cause I'm delicious, and I'm seditious, I'm curvilicious.
As soon as this became available, I downloaded it, and I also found it on Spotify because I can listen to Spotify at work. And I have to say,
like, it was on Spotify.
It's on Spotify. You can find it.
That's awesome. Cool.
And I have to say that it's such a fun song, and it's so infectious. But it's also there's a strength and a power behind it too.
I found this great groove, and I just thought, you know, this song is just all about attitude. It's like, I get to kind of live out, sometimes I think you can be braver as a songwriter and say things in songs that you might be too chicken to say in real life, you know? So you're like, hey, listen to this, because this is exactly how I feel, but I can't articulate it in real life. But, I just kind of was working out my, you know, like, hey, I shouldn't have to explain this to you. I got everything you need. I'm the bomb, and it's just about kind of saying to somebody, like, don't you see it? Don't you get it? This is a really fun attitude kind of song to write. Everybody loves to feel that way once in a while.
Well, I was going to say back to what Chanda said before and what you had mentioned, Sam, about not writing as much on the previous album. This album, I did like the previous album. I liked that quite a bit. But this album seems like it's more personal, and it seems like the lyrics are more related to your own experiences. They don't seem to be quite as very generic, like a pop song usually is, if you know what I mean. And they seem like they're coming right from you. And that's one of the things I think that really makes this album stand out and really makes it a very solid, even though the subgenres of electronica kind of jump all over the place, it's still everything seems like a coherent album because it's you doing it.
That's so cool. That's really great feedback because, you know, it's hard to choose. I wrote a lot of material for this, and it was hard to choose which ones would work. But, it is all me. I mean, these are my stories. This is my little world, my parts of my personality, and, you know, just, it's very personal. It's a very, very personal record, and it's also very vulnerable in that sense to kind of throw it out there for the world to hear, you know, to be like, wow, this really is me. These are my feelings. This is my vulnerability. This is my sass and my strength and my, you know, all of that stuff and my sexuality and just kind of throwing it all out there. But at the end of the day, that's what we do as artists. You know, we have to be brave like that and just kind of put it out there. It's something that I can't not do. As shy as I feel sometimes, it's like I have to do this. This is just what I love to do. I have to create like this.
I have to say, I'm just going to say this, that Blue Sea is unbelievably gorgeous, and you're talking about vulnerability, and I really hear that in your voice in that song.
It's
great to hear a singer that doesn't have to rely on studio tricks to make herself sound good, and Blue Sea is just this kind of pure moment of music where you can like see exactly into a person.
That's so lovely. Thank you. Yeah, I mean, I'm such a melody girl. I love melodies, and I love minor chords and ninth chords and just these beautiful kind of sad. But Blue Sea is kind of like the only sort of more melancholy track on the record, as you know. But it's so about. I don't actually like to say what songs are about because I love how people have their own experience of it. But I mean, it's pretty self-explanatory. I will say something about Blue Sea, which is pretty cool. I'm involved in a project called Womanology, which is a hard copy book. This amazing woman, Renee Delez, she spearheaded this project and initially was going to try and raise $25,000 to do a book through Kickstarter. Do you know about it? Yeah, and
yeah,
she's raised like $100,000. And it's to mentor young girls who want to become comic book writers and illustrators. And this project just took off. It's so beautiful. And they asked me to contribute something, and they said, do you want to contribute maybe song lyrics? So I sent a few songs to them, and they chose Blue Sea. And it's been adapted into comic book form with a whole story and illustrations. And I've seen what they're doing, and it's so beautiful. It's so beautiful, and I'm really honored. And all of these amazing, amazing women came together to create this amazing book. And it's all the proceeds are going to charity, and just a really cool thing to be a part of. So
I love when collaborations like that come together because there's so many so many fandoms coming together for something like that. It's I can't wait to see it.
It's pretty incredible. I can't wait to see it. So when it's all published and beautiful, and what an honor. I just thought, God, this is one of the coolest things I've ever been involved in, and so my hat's off to all the lovely ladies that are so talented, and a shout out to Womanology.
We're going to play another clip from Something Good. This is actually the title track, Something Good.
Yeah.
So we're going to play a little bit of that, and then we'll be right back and with Samantha Newark.
Feeling like a runaway.
could listen to that over and over again, I think.
Really? I love it, too. It's kind of like a feel-good anthem, you know? Because the world has gone crazy. And like the older we get, the more we're like, oh, my gosh, I wish I didn't know so much about what's going on this planet, you know? And maybe that's why Gem is just so alive in people's hearts, because they want to revisit a time when things were, you know, just not complicated and sweet.
One of the things about Gem that I've found is that she has all these huge problems every episode, but she always manages to find the right solution to everything. Maybe not at first, but she always seems to come out ahead and doesn't ever get really cynical or jaded or anything like that. She's always very positive. And I think that's part of it, is that the show conveys such a positive message in that way. And people just kind of watch it and feel good and, you know, they get a little respite from how crazy the world is.
It's so true. And, you know, that's just so true. And I think we forget that we have a choice, because there's so much beauty in the world and there's so much fun and there's so many wonderful, great things about being alive on the planet. And we can choose to focus on that. I mean, obviously we have to be in our world and chop wood, carry water and take care of things. But, you know, the show actually reminds me as a grown-up to, like, God, Sam, just lighten up, be happy, play music, write songs, get out there and perform and just be happy and talk to great people and be with your friends. And, you know, it's because I think it's all gotten way too serious. You know what I mean? This show reminds me of that, too, because maybe that's why it stood the test of time. It's got that message of don't give up hope, and life is beautiful. There's a lot of beauty.
Now, do you have any plans to tour or do any live performances for?
Oh, yes, I do. I'm actually working with somebody in Nashville right now that loves this kind of music and loves my record, and that's been kind of hard to find, I have to say. You know, that there's not a lot of. It's very country here. I mean, it is the home of country music, so I'm hoping to shake it up a little bit in Nashville, and I've definitely got some plans to, you know, go out there and maybe like as a duo type of thing and start playing this record live, because it's fun. I had a CD release party at the GMX convention on Friday night, and people were coming in from other parts of the hotel because we were playing it loud on the speakers, and they were wandering in and they were dancing and grabbing people and just dancing, and there were people in Batman costumes and all it was awesome. They really were enjoying it. So,
oh my gosh.
I know that the big convention around here in Minneapolis every summer always has a huge dance event in it, and they have actually a room dedicated just to DJs and dancing. I bet your album would be a really big hit there, too.
Oh, I need to get it to them. You'll have to put me in touch with them, because I would love that. I mean, it's such a joy to see people enjoying it, you know? I mean, it's one thing to... I used to do a lot of sort of singer-songwriter-y music, which I love, but there's something about putting a record on that makes you want to, you know, shake your butt and grab somebody and dance and, you know, feel sexy. And, yeah, there's something to that, and it's really fun. Like, I really wanted to go for it on this record, so.
I'd say you succeeded. It's a fantastic record.
Thank you. Did you get the little shout-out, the little Gem and the Hologram shout-out on Hands On Me?
I may have missed it. I'll have to listen to it again.
Yes. I had to do something subtle, because I did something very obvious before, obviously, for Gem Boy. But there is a subtle reference to Gem and the Holograms to the show on Hands On Me. So.
Oh, this
everybody
like...
download Hands On Me and see if you can guess what it is.
We're doing a 3-part series on Gem this month. The second part of the series, Johnny sort of addressed the influences that Gem has had on pop culture and music and especially the fans. Now, what sort of influences have you experienced? Have there been times where you've heard something or seen something and thought, wow, that's so Gem?
Oh, gosh. When I saw Lady Gaga at the Grammys like a couple of years ago, and I was like, oh, she's got Gem makeup on. She did. She totally had the Gem face makeup on, and I've seen a lot of that. And then, you know, you've got I think Katy Perry, when she had the blue hair, I was like, she looks like Stormer. And then there's Nicki Minaj, who I swear she's got, whoever her stylist is, has got to be a Gem fan, because their outfit's like right off the cartoon. And yeah, I think it's everywhere. And of course, the 80s is so back. You know, you go into the stores, and I see things that I used to buy as a kid, and I'm like, oh my God, it's all back. That's so insane. It's like completely secular. It's just lovely to see Gem just popping up everywhere and used so often. I don't know if you guys know about the Robot Chicken parodies that have been done. Yeah, they're really funny. And Jez might be too offensive to some people, but you know, I had to laugh. I was just like, wow, that's taking Gem to a whole new universe that I had not even considered.
I wasn't going to bring it up. I was like, I thought, you know what? No, I'm not even going to bring it up. I will say this though, that whenever I watch them, as sort of outlandish and offensive as it can be, there's still like, it's impossible to watch those clips without feeling this huge amount of affection for Gem and the Holograms and that show. Like, even distorted to the degree that he distorts it in what he does, there's still this affection there.
You couldn't have said it. I couldn't have said it any better. I agree. I absolutely agree. And it's like, I think in a weird way, in a just a really strange way, it's just an homage. It's an homage to Gem, and he's expressing it in his way, you know, and it's a very unique spin on it. But I forwarded it to a bunch of my friends that have really sick sense of humor, and I was just like, you have to see this. It's so funny and really scary and sad and great.
Who knew that it would be so easy to turn Gem and the Holograms into homicidal drag queens?
Completely, yes.
But there you go.
And I have to say that I want to be on a float with those drag queens that are. I saw a video. They were there was a float like the Gem and the Misfits, I think, and it was like Toronto Gay Pride, and they were coming down the road on a float, and there was my voice, you know, piping out to the thousands of people in the crowds, and they were dancing and doing the dialogue, and I was like, why was I not there? That's insane. I need to be there. I would have said it for real. I would have been on that float and said, Showtime Synergy.
We're going to get you on a float. That's going to be my mission now.
I want to be on a float with giant heels with the drag queens and have them do my hair for me.
Now, have you ever been invited to be a featured performer at a Gay Pride event by chance?
No, I haven't. And I think, and I would love to. That would be so fun. And I would, it's funny, I actually got to perform a song with Tiffany this weekend. Tiffany, the fabulous pop star from the 80s, and she is the coolest girl. She's so awesome. And we were part of a band called GLaDOS and the Companion Cubes, and we sang a song called Still Alive, and apparently it's from a huge game called Portal. Theme song. And yeah, so we all we winged it. Believe me, we had like lyric sheets and totally screwed it up, but yeah, she's been doing a lot of gay prides, and I was just like, wow, that would be so much fun. And I think my record would really translate, because it's sexy and fun and danceable and up-tempo, and so, yeah, I need to get on that.
Yeah, once you sort of put it out there, I can imagine it turning into a huge demand, so that would be really
cool.
It would
be so fun, and I would love to like sing Hands on Me and have some really hot gay boys next to me with like pilot hats on and some backup dancers.
I would like to see that also.
Yes, we can make that happen.
Now, what do you see for the future of the Gem property? Like in your wildest dreams, where do you think it could go now?
In my wildest dreams, gosh, I would love, I mean, the animation that they're doing today is so crazy amazing, and I think it would be really lovely if they just brought us all back to do some kind of cool animated new film, like an animated film, because obviously then I could play Gem, which would be really fun, and Jerrica. Otherwise, they'd hire some young Disney kid, and who knows what they're planning. Their Hasbro is definitely keeping things under wraps. They're not letting anybody really know what they're up to. But I think they're pretty sneaky, and they've got some cool plans for the franchise. And it's doing so well on the hub, and they know how much the fans love it. So they've got to be scheming and planning something pretty fabulous. And I just hope that I get to be a part of it somehow, because I love the show, you know.
Yeah, and I think the fans were really hoping that you'll get to be a part of it for years and years to come. I will say that New York Comic Con, every time I walked by the Hasbro booth, there was always a crowd of people around their gem display and taking pictures, and like I heard over and over again, like people were just in awe that it was there, and especially like all the cool stuff they had on display. So I definitely think like the interest is there. It's a good time and you know, a good feeling, and so hopefully we'll be seeing more of Gem coming soon.
Absolutely, and they just need to be standing at the booth going, Where's Samantha? so I can come meet the fans, because that's my favorite part of this whole thing, getting to do that. So
what's next for you, Samantha,
well,
not Gem?
Samantha, not Gem, yes. My record just came out on Friday, so I'm working with this talented guy in Nashville, and we're working on a live show, so we want to start getting out there, and I want to get out there and start playing this record, and definitely be booked all over the place next year for 2012.
We'll keep tabs on you, and we'll let people know where you're going to be and what you're going to be doing. Now, you've said it a couple of times already, but I have to imagine that the biggest thing that people probably ask you to say is Showtime Synergy.
Yes, definitely.
But
four shows over Synergy.
I have my own personal request of something I'd like you to say.
Sure.
this is not canon. This was not in the show, but I think it would be really cool to hear you say, "Congratulations, Rio. I know you and Riot will be very happy together."
It's so great. And then Gem can sing at their wedding. I love it. Well, congratulations, Riot and Rio. I know you guys are going to be so happy.
Perfect. That was awesome. Samantha, thank you so much. This has been a thrill and an incredible experience for us to get to talk to you.
You guys are truly outrageous, if I don't say so myself. This has been really fun. Yay.
I'm definitely going to be bouncing off the walls for a couple of hours and calling
everyone.
Don't hurt
yourself.
Guess who I'll talk to? So thank you so much for being part of our special series devoted to all things Gem. We will have a new podcast coming out in a couple of weeks, so definitely stay tuned for that. And we'll see you next time on fanboysoftheuniverse.com.
Thank you, you guys. Thank you so much, too. It was lovely to be here.
Synergy.